97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. I do not do weather for a living, but I can tell you that you head outside today. You are feeling the effects of that hurricane indirectly that is down north of Georgia now, apparently, and moving up into Tennessee because it's pushing some of that moisture over here to St. Louis. And we're not happy about that because we got a lot of important things going on this weekend, starting with the fact that Carl and Nicole and my wife and I are planning to go see Billy Joel tonight, and we're going to get wet.
Sting starts at 7. Dave said the weather's going to probably be a little better starting around 6.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it dies down a little bit. You're going to get a little wet. It's not going to be a downpour. Now, here's my question. Are they going to allow umbrellas to Busch Stadium?
I don't know that.
I doubt it.
Because you're blocking the person behind
say,
you if you had an umbrella up, right?
I doubt they would allow
and
that.
And there will be people on the field/floor.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Hmm.
And Sting is in a 3-piece band. He's playing bass just like in the Police, and he does 9 Police songs.
Nice.
You know, you have Evolution Festival happening at Forest Park, but then you also have St. Charles Oktoberfest going on,
I believe, tonight through Sunday.
So it's just that you have City playing here. They're going to be potentially affected. I know the Blues are playing, but they're, of course, covered. But there's so much going on, which is great. But
getting to and from.
Yeah.
Celebration Day at St. Louis Music Park, if you like Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see that, but I've already kind of committed to drinking
being
with you and
rain.
Billy Joel. I know. I'm already committed. But our friend Mama Kay is going out there to celebrate.
Megadeth was last night.
Sit inside my warm home with my New York strip steak and asparagus that I'm planning to cook tonight. I'm going to think of you guys as you're standing out in the wind and rain.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate. We will think of you too. We'll toast to you tonight while
Thank
we're
you.
Out there.
We will.
For sure. I hope you joined us on Rumble this morning. Lots of great comments on there. You can always tune in and watch the show there on X as well. And lots of fine folks on there that have joined us since we got put in Facebook jail. We don't know when we'll be back, but maybe someday we'll make it back there. The voter guide is done. I expect it to be posted to the website a little later today. I had to make some alterations there to the end of it, and I'll get it posted, I hope, before midday today. Certainly by this afternoon, we should have it up there for you. I'll also repost it on the Facebook page, so you can find it there. I'll put out a link on Twitter. Right now, Carl, let's find out what our top stories
are. I just got an update, Mark. Busch Stadium events say umbrellas are allowed.
Wow. Wait until you hear the arguments, though, from people who hold the umbrella up obnoxiously high. And then the person who paid $300 to see the concert's like, excuse me.
Yeah, thank you.
Can't see.
Yeah, they may all be huddled under the same umbrella.
Hey, I hate that your umbrella's in front of me, but can you put some over me?
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, Mark, here we go.
All right.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Just to be clear, for the record, are you definitively able to say that you are voting for Vice President Harris?
And join this race to decide who the president is, or to tell people, other people, how to decide to vote for the president.
When your candidate is so bad, you run from them. That is Lucas Kuntz, Democrat Senate candidate, who says there's no way he's endorsing Kamala Harris.
It is a false choice to suggest you are either in favor of the Second Amendment or you want to take everyone's guns away.
Or you could be honest with people and admit that you tried to ban handguns when you were an elected official in the city of San Francisco. So how about a little honesty, Kamala?
Would your family let you go over to somebody's house who's really supportive of Donald Trump?
No.
And why not?
Because, like, my mom and dad don't like Donald Trump at all.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, there's a CNN finding a little honesty there. How about that? And the different answers from the kids that came from conservative families. That's the shocking part of that interview on CNN.
I do too, but I don't think it turns around if Kamala Harris gets into office.
Yeah, that is Joe Rogan, the well-known podcaster who has got millions of followers, who for some reason seems to not like Kamala Harris, but refuses to have Donald Trump on his podcast so that his millions of listeners can hear from him.
So who does he claim to be supporting in the presidential race?
I don't know, but I want you to listen to this soundbite I got from him from his podcast yesterday. And, of course, like me, who is a victim of being targeted by big tech, we've been banned from YouTube because I supported and continue to support ivermectin, and I'm not afraid to talk about that. It should have been used. It could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives during COVID, but Big Pharma and the left decided you shouldn't talk about it. But we talked about it anyway, and YouTube gave us three strikes and you're out, right? So we are victims of this big tech suppression. Guess who else is a little worried about that? A guy that's got millions of followers on his podcast channel. He doesn't want the government suddenly deciding what you can say and what you can't say. It's a violation of free speech. And he's worried that if Kamala Harris gets elected, that's exactly what he'll face. And I'm glad that he's out there saying it, but he needs to put his money where his mouth is and interview the guy who wouldn't do that, who is Donald Trump, who had to start Truth Social so he could get his point of view expressed after being shut down by Twitter at the time, owned by Dorsey at the time. But listen to this.
I do too, but I don't think it turns around if Kamala Harris gets into office. I think they clamp down more. I think the same stuff that they were trying to do with Twitter, they'll try to do with something else and with other things. They've already openly discussed it. You know, she's openly discussed that the same rules have to apply to Facebook, they have to apply to Twitter, and that Elon Musk could lose his privileges. And, like, there's so many wild things that they're saying. Tim Walz said that the First Amendment doesn't apply to misinformation or hate speech. Okay, well, it certainly does. It does. You know, sometimes people say things wrong. And the goal of the First Amendment is you say something wrong, and then this guy who's an expert says the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then you correct him.
Yeah, I mean, the misinformation, I mean, it's all opinion.
Right. Well, you know? So much of it turns out to be true. How about masks don't work? You would get screamed at for masks don't work. Well, guess what? They don't work. They don't work.
Had to get the F-bomb in there.
Fauci said masks don't work.
Yeah, that's Rogan for you. I knew we'd have to bleep something in there at some point, for sure.
You know, Dave Ramsey, I saw him post about how he reached out to Kamala Harris's campaign and Donald Trump's campaign, asked them both for interviews, and no one's going to be surprised that the only one who said yes was Donald Trump. He went to Trump Tower, and Ramsey interviewed him, I believe, yesterday. That's going to be an interesting interview because obviously that's going to be heavily focused, I would imagine, on the economy. But that's probably why Kamala Harris did not want to do the interview, because she doesn't know what she's talking about. And all the people who are economists will tell you, even crazy liberal, Mark Cuban will sit there and say, despite him very supportive of Kamala, says what she wants to do as it relates to the economy is going to sink it.
Yeah. I would like to see, maybe Trump wins, he appoints Ramsey as debt czar.
Ooh.
And if that happens, we're all eating pork and beans. Can I just tell you that?
Well, and you know what? And RFK Jr. is going to make sure that the pork and beans aren't loaded with all the chemicals, because I'd like him over the FDA, please.
Thank you. A couple of fine choices there. All right, coming up, January 6th, right? We know what the left, in my opinion, did regarding January 6th. We know how they've tried to use it as a weapon against Donald Trump. I was there. I witnessed what happened. Ford Fisher is a cinematographer who was there as well, and he's putting out a new documentary on January 6th. And we're going to pick his brain. I don't know where he's coming from on this, I'll be honest with you. But we're going to get him on here, coming up here at 8:20. Stay tuned.
This is not an election between Republicans and Democrats. This is an epic struggle for the future of this country between dark and light. We will win this fight, or America will step off into 1,000 years of darkness.
We're going to protect this president by stopping the steal.
Stop the steal!
Stop the steal!
When I went to bed on election night, he was ahead.
The system is a lie. The ballot counting's a lie.
It's called democracy. You count every single vote.
Yeah, that is a part of a new documentary out called Fight Like Hell, about January 6th, and maybe a different approach, according to the producers, to tell this story, they claim, in an unbiased way. And we got Ford Fisher with us right now, one of the co-writers and cinematographer on Fight Like Hell. Ford, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So were you there?
Yes, I was there on January 6th, as well as at many of the rallies that preceded it over the previous few months that get a lot less media attention than the day of January 6th itself. But the film has all of it.
Yeah, I was there, too. I was the only media personality from St. Louis who went to D.C. to cover that for the radio station here. So when I saw your trailer, I mean, I recognized, obviously, a lot of those scenes from around the Lincoln Memorial and even some from the front lawn of the Capitol there. I was not a by the front, but I was a little further back down the lawn. But so tell me your approach with this documentary.
For sure. So I think that there are two critical elements that really make the film different from many of the other documentaries, and especially the news coverage that kind of came out of January 6th. Firstly, for the beginning of the documentary, you do see from November 3rd, election night, all the way kind of until January 6th, how there was a Stop the Steal movement that formed in real time, from November 5th at the very first one that had like a dozen people to rallies that drew thousands of people to Washington, D.C. with far less fanfare and kind of media attention. On January 6th itself, what the film has that's rather different is, firstly, a previously unreleased IMAX-grade footage. So when you're watching the film, you're seeing a lot of January 6th footage that just the world has never seen before. But on top of that, something that's very different about it is that whereas the media and other films in the documentary space tend to kind of make the case for or against Trump or trying to make people look one way or another, it's a very, very raw presentation. There's no commentary. There's no voiceover. There's no after-the-fact interviews. It's a very raw presentation of what somebody on the ground would see in real time from the front lines of these situations.
Being someone who was on the ground, Ford, what was your takeaway? What was your personal experience on that day?
Yeah, so your co-host mentioned that they were on the west front of the Capitol. I arrived on the west front along with kind of the beginning of the march that came from the Trump speech. Something that's important and that the film, I think, demonstrates pretty well is that there were people who breached, of course, before Trump actually finished speaking. Myself personally, I was at the front of the group who marched toward the Capitol with the conclusion of the Trump speech. So by the time I was there, chaos had already ensued. Ultimately, I went around to the east steps and then back to the west. And what I definitely saw is that there was a variety of levels of participation, right? To be sure, a couple thousand people participating in going in, some participating in violence and so forth, but also tens of thousands of people present, as your experience being distant from kind of the West Lawn would be. You know, it was the front lines that were encountering that kind of conflict, as well as, of course, there were gigantic crowds of many people who wouldn't see that kind of action up close.
Right. Yeah. And for those of us further back in the crowd, it was not clear at all why the first, smoke bombs were even set off, the tear gas. Nobody could understand what was going on. You were there, Ford. There were multiple rallies scheduled all around D.C., both on January 5th and 6th. And I went to the one that morning down by the World War II Memorial, and then moved over by the Lincoln Memorial to listen to the president's speech. And there were people there with their kids, with their dogs. I mean, that was not a crowd that was there to overthrow or create an insurrection.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, as I think that the film demonstrates well, and I do want to plug that you can watch it for free on YouTube, Fight Like Hell. What I think that it does demonstrate, and what you're kind of pointing out is, you know, even conservatively, people say that there were 100,000 people who were in the Capitol, meaning the capital of the United States.
Yes.
You know, six-figure number of people. Even the Justice Department kind of says, you know, at top, probably 3,000 people who they think that they would charge. Even giving that kind of liberal estimate on the number of participants, that's still like 3%, right? And so two things can be true at once, which are that, as you would see in the film, like there was immense fighting kind of at the front lines, as well as far, far below, a single digit number of percent of people actually participated in that kind of frontline action.
Yeah.
With all of that being said, it's become an infamous moment in American history. And it's important to understand how that actually happened from that frontline perspective.
It is. And what you mentioned is the documentary Fight Like Hell is available. It's available now on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Fight Like Hell.
Absolutely. Ford Fisher, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. I'm going to have to watch it. I mean, hell, I could be in there. When the speech ended, I joined everybody else walking down, I don't know, it's at Constitution Avenue that goes down to the Capitol building. And I'm walking down through there with thousands of my friends. I was doing Facebook Lives for the radio station and for this show and taking video myself of that. He must have been right there in front of me.
I hope to watch this weekend.
Yeah, well, we'll need to check that out. Fight Like Hell is the name of that documentary. Coming up, we'll get to Wiggins America right after this.
I don't see a reason why he needs to get back up on stage with her. He's actually still ahead in this race. Kamala Harris is about 5 points back of where Joe Biden was at this time in 2020, and she's 3 to 4, maybe 5 points back in all of the key battleground states. She's actually even polling worse than Hillary Clinton was at this point in 2016. So I think if you're Donald Trump, you look at it, you see, I'm in the lead. Why do I want to give her another bite at the apple? She didn't connect by being able to explain to the voters during the first debate of how she would lower prices, how she would deal with the immigration crisis that she caused. And I don't think that he should give her an audience of 60 million to try and try again.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
Wow. So you see, Ryan, a very different story on these polls depending on who you're talking to. That was Mark Lotter. We have him on here as a guest pretty regularly. Used to work for Trump. He says Trump's winning. I've got a number of articles and polls, including Rasmussen polls in front of me, showing Trump winning, if not by a point or two nationally, certainly in enough of the swing states that would deliver him the presidency. And yet, when you look at like the Real Clear Politics average and a few of these others, you would see that they still show Harris up by 2 points for president when you look at that clearinghouse of polls.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's really tough to dissect because there's not only is there more data than there used to be, but there's also so many more media organizations tied to these pollsters that are paying their paychecks that, you know, some of them like LA Times and CNN, they actually had pretty good 2016 polling and then all of a sudden changed their methods for 2020 and beyond. You're like, you did good. Why would you change what you did in 2016? So there's obviously people out there who are pushing these polls. You know, the media organizations that are tied to a lot of them are very far left, and they want to see a result. And the weird thing is, in the numbers that I've been looking at over the last couple weeks, and you played the debate sound, and he was talking about the debate. You know, the debate was weird because the majority, and I'm not talking about a huge majority, like 53% to 55%, somewhere in there, say that Kamala Harris won the debate. They also drifted toward Trump on all the key issues after the debate.
Yeah.
So you're basically saying, okay, she had a better performance. The bar was really low for her. So she came in higher than her bar and yet didn't really gain anything from the debate.
It might have been at the bar before she went in for that. We don't know.
You would say that, Mark. I just think back to 2016 because we saw the polls saying that you know, Trump was going to lose, and then look what happened. So I think that's kind of how things go, that maybe it's because these conservatives, when you get the phone call saying, would you like to participate in our poll, they say, beep, no, I don't want to do that. So maybe that's why they're skewed. I'm hoping that he's going to show them that's what the case is, and that it's favoring a lot of liberals, and they're saying they're supporting Kamala. I agree with Mark Lotter. I do not think that he should debate Kamala again. But I was playing a clip earlier from Charlie Kirk going to these college campuses, talking to students about who they're supporting and why. And there was this one kid who said, well, you know, I pretty much support Trump on every single policy stance that he has. But morally, he says, I just can't do it. I don't think he's a nice person. And I don't think that's a good role, like a role model for our country. I mean, that's what people are saying, which is just sad.
With any polling, the tough thing about Donald Trump, and we've seen it for two election cycles now, is that you have a lot of people that will not answer polls, especially for Trump. So the people that all this data is based on are your people who are in the tank. They're high propensity voters, which is good for both sides. But what about that average person who maybe doesn't show up for midterms, but they do show up for presidential elections? Where do you think they're leaning? A, they're not answering polls because they don't care. They're not going to, I mean, I won't answer polls because I don't want to be on their list. Like, I love polls and I still won't do it because I know I'll get 20 more calls if I answer one of them. So the average person's not answering polls. It's your high propensity voters, your super powerful base that's answering. That average person, who do you think they're showing up for?
Trump.
I don't know a liberal that would answer that question differently. You know, it's everybody understands that the groundswell, the average, the working American, they're supporting Trump. They're just not very loud about it. Now, Trump has his loud base, don't get me wrong, but the average voter is just not screaming, yeah, Harris. Like, there's right. nothing about her in any, not just policy, but like issues that are facing average people. They don't see anything in her that they're identifying with.
Yeah.
The joy. That's what people say that they like is I feel joy when Kamala Harris speaks. And if I think about her being the president, joy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the campaign. But that's very public. You know, everything about that campaign is forward facing. They're not doing sort of like background, like how do we actually fix anything? It's all presentation
yep.
all the time. And so that's why you see Harris signs is because these are the people who are already vote. They were going to vote for Biden. They didn't care. They thought he was sharp as a tack. They were going to say this guy is the best guy, and they just shifted to Harris.
Yeah, yeah. I saw there's a guy who's a regular commentator on MSNBC. I think it's MSNBC. Maybe it's CNN. His name is Eli Mistal. Have you seen him? The guy with the big hair. He's got big hair. He's a black guy. He's got big hair. But it's shock white. So that's how I. Think of him when I think of his when I think of his name. That's what. Anyway, he tweeted out the other day, "What a sad state of affairs that once again for the I forget what he said the third, fourth time or fifth time or whatever. You know, a candidate's going to win the national popular vote, but won't but might not win the election. What a sad state of affairs that." And I'm like, the sad thing here is that you're too stupid to understand why the Electoral College was put in place. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a representative republic where the population centers in L.A. and San Francisco and New York and Chicago can't run roughshod over the rest of us in the middle of the country. We get a say, too.
Yeah, and people will say, well, but then it just comes down to a handful of voters in a few states. Yeah, but those states are constantly shifting.
Yes.
It's never just the population. If you did a national vote, it would always just be the population centers that were determining everything. That's where all the campaign rallies would be because that's all that would matter. And if you didn't live in one of the top, let's say, 5 or 10 markets, you'd never even see a candidate. Well, and people go, well, if you don't live in Pennsylvania right now, if you live in Missouri and Illinois, you're not seeing candidates. Yeah, well, Missouri 20 years ago was a swing state. You know, these things shift around. And so if you're worried about, you know, representing all of America, I mean, tell me what the better system is, because it's not national popular vote.
No. Did you hear what Lucas Kuntz did yesterday? Have you heard the sound yet?
I think so.
Oh.
I think so.
This is classic. Lucas Kuntz is on with NBC News. What's her name?
Kristen Welker.
Oh,
no.
She does, you know, the Sunday show. And I couldn't tell if this was part of the regular show or if it was a separate interview she did with him. It was kind of hard to tell. I didn't get the impression that it was during their Sunday morning show. She's got Lucas Kuntz on, obviously running against Josh Hawley, and she asks him who he number one, she confirms he's voting for Amendment 3 because he wants abortion until birth. He's going to vote to kill the filibuster if he's in the Senate. And then she asks him if he's pushing for Kamala Harris. Listen to Cut 12 here, Carl, please.
Just to be clear, for the record, are you definitively able to say that you are voting for Vice President Harris?
And join this race to decide who the president is or to tell people, other people, how to decide to vote for the president. You know, it's a uphill battle for me just going around Missouri, asking people to vote for me for U.S. Senate. So I'm focusing on that. I'm real excited to get into this office and win. And I can tell you right now, I will work with anyone and any president to bring money back to our state and do all the things that everyday people here in Missouri need. And that includes codifying Roe versus Wade, ending the filibuster, passing the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, and many other things.
But you're comfortable saying you're going to support the amendment in your state. You're not going to support, or you can't say definitively here and now that you will support the Democratic nominee for president?
again, I didn't get in the race to try to decide how other people vote for president. I've gotten into this race to sell myself, to talk about what I'm going to do for Missouri, and I just want to stay hyper-focused on that.
Yeah. That whooshing sound you just heard was Lucas Kuntz running away from Kamala Harris.
It's so funny because I had heard that. Where he's going, listen, I mean, he almost actually says this. He goes, listen, I'm driving around this state. This is an uphill battle already. Don't make me endorse Kamala Harris. That's real close to what he actually said there.
That is the truth. All right, can you hang around, Brian? Right, we're going to be back right after this. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back into the show. Glad you're with us this morning. Of course, it's still pouring outside right now. We don't know what's going to happen this weekend, but we do know this. We need good weather for October 4th because there's a big charity softball tournament that's going to be taking place pitting the Police versus Fire Department. This is going to be fantastic. Out at Carshield Field in O'Fallon. We have Corporal Barry Bells with us this morning from the St. Charles County Police Department. And, of course, we got Matt Knoyer from Central County Fire. Welcome in, gentlemen.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Fantastic.
Are you? Good?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So this is something new you're starting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how it got started, Corporal.
Well, this is our first year of the event, and so I wanted to do something. We have a police association called Blue Line Family, St. Charles County Blue Line Family, for all of our employees, sworn, non-sworn, professional staff, dispatch. And I thought, what could we do that really gets a lot of attention and really draws a lot of interest? And I thought about softball, and I thought about the fire department because most people know the friendly rivalry that we have between police and fire.
Every cop I know tells me they just sit around barbecuing all the time. Is that true?
It's chilly. It's chilly.
That's it. We just sit around and eat.
If you're just sitting around, you can play some softball.
That's it. We practice every
day. I'm just kidding you, Matt. You know that. No, but go ahead. I interrupted.
No, but it's, yeah. So I gave Matt a call and he said, man, I love the idea. And it just kind of took off from there. Matt's done a lot of things like this, been involved in a lot of charity endeavors. And our goal really is to make it similar to Guns N' Hoses, but a little bit more family friendly.
Yeah.
Something you bring your 10, 11, 12-year-old kids to and just really enjoy the evening. And St. Charles County is such a supportive community of first responders overall.
How competitive does this get?
Well, as of right now, it's not competitive at all. But once we get onto the field, all bets are off.
The gloves
Let's go.
Game faces on.
I don't know this guy.
There's no friends on the softball field.
The war paint goes on your faces?
That's it. Okay. That's it. Yep.
So let me figure out how this is going on now. You're now recruiting among the ranks to find the whoever the good softball players are, right?
Oh, there's no need to recruit. We already know who the good softball players are.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The good ones got a phone call. The bad ones
didn't.
Because
there's time to practice, right?
That's all it is, too. Yeah, I mean, we practice every day. That's all we do, yeah.
They're bringing in a bunch of ringers, you know? I mean, we have to work the streets. We have to serve the public. But they're bringing a bunch of ringers in. It looks like a bunch of male models.
Were you standing on the side of the street the other day holding that sign trying to recruit players?
He was.
Was that you? Okay.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
Yeah,
you look familiar. It's for a good cause.
Right. Got it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm assuming having it at Carshield is a great facility, too, because I've been out there for a number of games and they kind of got it going on. Right. They figured out at the minor league level how to get the crowd involved. And it's more personal there. So
very personal, very family friendly.
Yeah.
And that's what Barry and I have been discussing for months. I mean, we've been planning this since February, is how can we make this a family friendly event? You know, Guns N' Hoses, we all know it's awesome, but I'm not bringing my 12-year-old to Guns N' Hoses. We're trying to do something that is keeps it more local for St. Charles County. And you can bring your kids, whether they're 2, 12 or 22, you can bring the whole family. It's cheap. It's a good time. You don't have to have a $28 beer if you wanted one. You know, you can come out. There'll be giveaways and raffles. We have superheroes nights and stuff like that. So it's for kids of all ages and for the parents. It's, you know, it's an intimate setting, but yet it's still a big field.
Yeah, but it is a fundraiser. This is on a Friday. Tell me how you're getting to the fundraising part of it. Is there an admission ticket to get in? Is it donations? What are you doing?
So, you can either go to the Carshield, the Hoots website. You can go to either of our social media. It has flyers there. You can scan QR codes. You can purchase different tickets. There's like a 4-pack for a family. It includes drink, hot dog, and chips. It's $40. Or you can buy a whole tabletop. There's all-you-can-eat packages. At the gate, it's $9. Carshield's really done a great job helping organize this and manage managing it.
Yeah.
And basically, we're just sharing, we're splitting the proceeds between us. But we have a lot of community partners behind this. ServPro is underwriting it. Just the whole thought of ServPro and first responders serving the community. We've got People's National Bank. We also have St. Charles Automotive is part of it. And then we've had other businesses around the area that have donated things for silent auction, home run sweepstakes. If you have your name drawn or your ticket drawn during an inning and a home run's hit, then you win that prize.
So, oh, nice.
No purchase necessary. Everybody gets a ticket when they walk in the door, and when the firemen hit a home run, whoever's standing there waiting on it, they get a prize.
This should be a lot of fun.
He's already talking a lot of games.
There is a lot of smack talk, and yeah, you guys got some time to
well,
go.
Well, just for the record, it's St. Charles County Police Department versus Central County Fire and O'Fallon Fire, because it takes two fire departments to equal one police department.
I see that.
So when it's all said and done, that's the facts.
That's good.
Is that okay, Matt?
Hey, man, he can come up with whatever excuse he needs. That's fine.
Matt Kenoyer with the Central County, Corporal Barry Bales with St. Charles County. Thank you, guys. October 4th, you can go to either of their websites to find out details and show up for the charity softball event out there. Should be fun. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. All right. Have a great weekend. Kim, Carl, Sue, and I will see you back here Monday morning starting at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.